up for talking nonsense?
Who's up for talking nonsense?
I'm the American Jezebel.
This is the Greasy Rapidian.
And we're talking nonsense.
With?
We have our... Are we introducing it right away?
Right away. Right off the bat.
We have a special guest in studio. Our first in-studio guest. It's so exciting. It's a big day over here.
The
it's
worldwide headquarters of Talking Nonsense.
Yeah, Talking Nonsense HQ is being graced by our first in-house guest. The anarcho-syndicalist is here with us today.
Howdy.
You really
adapted to the West very quickly.
Yeah, I do have to say that I kind of object to this trail name that I've been given.
Why do you object to your trail name?
It's just not appropriate. It doesn't fit.
Because you don't subscribe to the anarcho-syndicalist ideology?
I think I'd just rather not have a trail name at all.
Oh, you just want to be like an anonymous
exactly
voice.
You can actually call me anonymous.
He's trying to come up with his own trail name.
He is.
He doesn't know the rules of the trail name.
I don't think that's acceptable. I'm really sorry. Yep. Yeah. Denied. I will have to say, agree to disagree. Yeah, you will remain the anarcho-syndicalist.
I will have to agree to disagree.
Our first agree to disagree.
In studio, agree to disagree.
In studio, agree to disagree.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be here.
You sound thrilled.
All right, so to get this nonsense off to a quick start, we have to start with the first order of business, and that is that we had technical difficulties last episode.
We did.
With Be Somebody.
So, yes, there was some severe technical difficulties on the episode. And so we have decided, well, couple that with Be Somebody being a real palate cleanser of a movie. Extremely inoffensive.
Yep.
That was, I think, the best we could have said for it. It was an inoffensive movie.
Yeah.
Made for tween girls.
Yep. Full of tropes.
Ugh, terrible graffiti art.
Yeah, no real clear message.
Mm-hmm.
No real character development.
The poor mom just cooking oatmeal every day. Nobody eating her oatmeal. So we'll just do the highlights of our episode.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I think we don't need to do a whole redo of 45 minutes of Be Somebody.
No.
My favorite line of the movie was the mom making oatmeal and the daughter refusing it. And then the mom turns to the husband and goes, well, do you want any oatmeal? That's how bad this movie was. That was my favorite line.
Yeah, and I believe that my favorite line of the movie was when the giant rock star who everybody knows, his posters in the hardware store, he's so famous, comes to dinner.
This tiny town.
And somehow the dad and mom don't recognize him, even though his poster is in every store in town.
That dad never goes in the hardware store. He's busy solving graffiti crimes.
He is. He is busy. He's NCIS, Tulsa, or whatever he is. I don't know where they're at. No, they're in California. There's some small Colfax, California.
Yeah, exactly. So they're in some,
Lodi. You know, they're in Lodi. You can't get out of Lodi once you go to Lodi. Anyway, so he's NCIS Lodi, California. And so, anyway, he has no idea who this kid is, and so they have him over for dinner. And then after dinner, they're chatting about dreams and stuff, and he says, I was in a band when I was in college. This is my favorite line of the movie.
Those are some rough favorite lines.
That tells you the depth of that movie.
That tells you how poor the dialogue was.
It was a serious palate cleanser.
Really, we spent most of the time not listening to anything that they were saying, watching their terrible empty cup acting.
Oh, the empty cup.
So, but just slamming those empty cups down on the table.
Yeah.
Ugh. And then we were talking about alternative movies that this could have been,
oh,
including
right.
NCIS, what was the city?
Lodi.
NCIS Lodi, where a police detective is trying to solve a series of brutal graffiti crimes. And then he gets a call from his partner, and his partner goes, Detective, the graffiti artist is inside your house. And it was his daughter all along.
Get out of the house. She's in the house.
The other alternate is that we wanted her to be a teen murderer.
We wanted her to misery him.
Yeah, because he just jumps in this strange girl's car to escape his fans. He doesn't know who she is. Turns out she's a teen Kathy Bates. Those would
I've
have
never
been...
had a boy in my room before, mm-hmm. and broke his legs.
So we just add broke his legs onto every line
every
of the movie.
Every line that we just add.
You have to follow your dream of breaking your legs. So we spent the whole time proposing alternate movies to this movie. But it was, right? After Creep Week, you know, a bunch of terrible middle-aged men... We had a nice movie about two teenagers who sort of fall in love, make terrible art together, and talk about the importance of following your dreams.
Or don't make art. He never does art.
Yeah.
What was the song?
Girl, you make me want to be somebody. all I wanted from this movie was for him to sing her a terrible original song he'd written. There was no original music.
All right, do we need to rate this thing back to the
I think we do.
Oh, anonymous,
yes.
I'm sorry.
Anonymous. No, I thought we agreed to disagree with him naming himself.
So we just taunt him by almost calling him Anonymous.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
I think that was it.
So this was, I rated this one first.
Oh, no, but first we have to give our star by far.
Oh, star by far.
Because there were people that were really good in this movie.
My star by far was...
Do you want me to read you their names?
Robbie Zink. What was his name? Bowie Dinky.
Bowie Dink. And Kelvin Piemont.
Those were my two stars.
Bowie Dink and Kelvin Piemont. Who did they play in the movie?
They were the music supervisors.
Nice.
Yeah,
the director of music and the music supervisor or whatever. The score was awesome.
Music was awesome. Except that it lacked an original song.
Exactly.
Girl.
You're somebody who makes me want to be somebody.
He's dancing along to it already. It's a really catchy tune.
It is a catchy tune.
It so fits the character.
He's totally
he would have written that song.
Okay. Your star by far.
And my star by far was Eve Cohen.
Eve, I don't remember her in the movie.
She was actually the director of photography for this movie. she did a great job. Eve showed up, terrible movie, terrible script. The actors were not good, and she made it look beautiful.
Yeah.
They went on a hike above some giant city that was, I guess, L.A., and it just was just beautiful. Beautiful cinematography on this.
I'm sitting up on the roof, the sun's setting.
The moody, you know, driving, the cars driving past her.
The after
as
work,
she was,
after driving the pizza. Oh, man.
The sadness of suburban America as you deliver pizzas.
Yep.
She just shot it so beautifully.
Oh, it was great.
The blue light around the gas station.
Breaking
as she was just,
high school.
Just sitting there next to the gas station.
Just great.
Oh,
yep. So
Eve, you did a great job.
Watch this movie without dialogue, because you want the sound. You still want the music.
Yeah.
Bowie
Dinky and Kelvin Piemont. Yes.
You want the music and the cinematography, but you don't want dialogue.
The dialogue is
so if there's an
terrible.
Option on your TV to eliminate dialogue,
mm-hmm.
please do that.
Somebody should recut this. Yeah. Also as where she's a teen misery.
All right, so I think I read first, so no need to explain. I'm just going to go bang, 97 kb.
Okay. And I gave it 63. Mm-hmm.
It's solid. It's a solid double digit movie.
Yep. Inoffensive.
Yeah. Palate cleanser.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Palate cleansed us for what?
Well, we move on. Palate cleansers. It was brought to you by the Satire Lounge.
It is. Yes, if anything will cleanse your palate, it's the Satire Lounge.
Yeah, it will cleanse your
palate. In more ways than one.
In a great way.
Yeah. Tired of the hipsters in this city?
Go cleanse your palate at
Tired
the Satire
Lounge. Tired of the tech bros? Tired of not seeing four men with ponytails? Go to the Satire.
Yes. It had it all.
Mm-hmm.
It was a happening place. And so we went there for Christmas Day dinner. It lived up to its Christmas reputation.
There was just an old man pitching in behind the bar because the woman was there working alone.
Yep.
Yeah. Some guy in a coat just like went back behind the bar and started pouring drinks.
Yeah. Ponytail came from back in the, I don't know where he came from.
Who knows?
The neighboring bar.
Yeah.
To make sure that we knew, you had to go to the bar to get your drinks here.
Mm-hmm. People were singing, having a great time.
Dancing in the corner. Yeah. A little romance happening.
Yep,
in
there was romance. There was brotherhood happening. Yeah. Overall, men in overalls slapping each other on the
cowboy
back.
Cowboy hat came
great.
Up to
oh,
greet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was great.
And so, highly recommend if you were in Denver, like if you traveled out to New York. Mm-hmm. And you're saying, what should I do when I'm in Denver? Should I go to Bastion's for a sugar steak? Mm-hmm. Should I go to Chook for some Australian chicken? Should I go to the neighborhood brew pub? Or should I go on to East Colfax, the Satire Lounge?
Mm.
First place that Bob Dylan played when he came to Denver. That's where you should go.
Mm-hmm. Get their world famous blue margaritas.
Not a pitcher.
No, they don't have a pitcher.
Yeah, they just see four glasses if you
have a pitcher. Yep, famous blue. Get a blue margarita down at the Satire.
All right, thanks Satire for being a future sponsor.
And we're actually also sponsored. If you need a little palate cleanser from your palate cleanse at the Satire, if things are a rumbling after your trip to the Satire, which they won't be.
No.
You can head over and get some Nodalyn's bone broth. It's real cold out there right now.
It's real cold out
your
there.
Your immune system might be a little shaky. Mm-hmm. It's time for some Nodalyn's bone broth.
I think Dr. No Nonsense sponsors this.
I think so, yeah.
9 out of 10, Dr. No Nonsense. Bone broth.
She should come on to give medical advice because we have some medical advice that we could dispense for the cold, cold months out here.
Well, you know, I was recently at Jodic's birthday party.
Mm-hmm. Is that his trail name? It's just Jodic. Jodic is his trail name.
Yeah, Jodic is his trail name. Yeah. But they were there, and I said, you know, anarcho-syndicalist and the American Jezebel are not going to be here today because they're not feeling well.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the people there said, oh, garlic and onions.
And
I said, oddly enough, I think that's what the anarcho-syndicalist is taking in small doses in a little bottle.
Yeah. Garlic and onions in a bottle?
Isn't there garlic and onions in there?
In what?
You enjoy the flavor.
In the Nona limbs?
No. You're eating something else to help with your
I catch your drift now.
We're just going for all of our sponsors in one go.
Not onion, but garlic.
Okay.
Yes. The other day when you were having, you were like, you could taste the flavor. You garlic and onion.
You can really taste the garlic in... I think this is your next sponsor, maybe.
Sponsor?
Your future sponsor. Dave's yeah. Total Insanity. Total Insanity. It is, it is insanely hot, but it's also absurdly flavorful. Dave's Total Insanity.
Beautiful. You don't need any copy. All right. So thank you to the Satire, Nonolin's Bone Broth, and Dave's Total Insanity.
So does this mean that you are selling out?
I think, oh yeah.
We're selling out? What?
We're selling out to very fringe food products.
The Satire?
This, I don't think the Satire is selling out.
It is not a sellout.
We are only selling out to
fringe,
yeah, to fringe food products.
Yeah, I like that.
Slave-free chocolate.
Yeah.
What about a certain jalapeno chip?
That would be a sellout.
We can't. We're not sponsored by them.
And okay. We beg Netflix every week to sponsor us too.
We do, but not the company that we watch this movie on.
No.
Because we are not wanting to be sponsored by them.
No.
We will not mention their name. We do have some integrity.
Mm-hmm. We'll only sell out to non-sellouts.
And we are still, to be clear, receiving no money from any of these companies.
Except.
We did get a discount on.
Sustainabetter.
And you might have to have some Sustainabetter after a bout of Dave's Insanity. You might need something that's nutritiously nutty and delightfully good.
Digestible.
Well, the authorities recommend milk or dairy-based products to cut the insane heat.
I don't think that's true. I think that's a myth.
I think it's pretty true. I think that in my experience, you know, if you eat some really, really hot Indian food, you need to make sure you get a cream-based next dish.
What about if you ask for Thai-level spice at the U.S. Thai Cafe.
Yeah. That is not advised. Do not do that.
We are not sponsored by Thai Level Spice at the U.S. Thai Cafe.
You will have the most intense digestive, we'll call it hellscape, the next 3 days. So,
I think it's technically a human rights violation.
So stick with the Dave's total insanity. Insanity is a much better option than hellscape.
Oh, yes. All right. Well, shall we talk about this movie?
We've lived up to the nonsense already. Oh. Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Should we talk about our trilogy and then how that brings us into our next movie?
Yeah, let's talk about our trilogy a little bit.
All right. So this is the cinematography trilogy.
It is.
Yeah. So for the next, for part two of our 3-part cinematography, we have decided to watch Francis Ford Coppola's 1983 classic, Rumblefish. Let me tell you about that movie, if I may.
Tell us about the movie.
All right. This is an unforgettable story of a young man's struggle to live up to his adored brother's reputation in an impoverished industrial town. And then it goes on to list all the people who are in it. Matt Dillon, Mickey Rourke, Rusty James, and the Motors Boy, Nicolas Cage, AJ Oak, and it just goes on and on. So there's nothing else added to it other than that little bit. So given that little bit, was that the movie you guys saw?
Kind of, yeah. Or I think that's what the movie wants to be about, right? Like, do you think that's what the movie is about?
I think that's fair based on what I saw. I was, mind you, half asleep. So, but yeah, that sounds pretty accurate.
It's Jezebel, what do you think?
Yeah, because I mean, I think that that's true. That like he's trying to live up to his brother's reputation. But they don't tell us why his brother is so celebrated. They don't tell us. I mean, we can kind of infer why he's so obsessed with the old gang life that seemed to exist before heroin came and ruined the gangs. But so I think on a surface level that is true. But there's a lot that is very mysterious about the movie and about like why the motorcycle boy is who he is and why Rusty James is, you know, trying to be like him. So I guess that's less a mystery.
It's maybe our most accurate description yet.
It probably is also the vaguest, because this was a very vague movie.
It was. It was not concerned with concrete details about anything, including where they lived, which seemed to be half like bustling town where people were riding horses down a Las Vegas style strip, and then half like a ghost town where tumbleweeds were blowing through the smoke and trash fires were just burning during the day. So
but it was great signage.
The signs were amazing.
They had a killer sign shop.
Yeah, I think it was supposed to be Tulsa, Oklahoma, which, based on what I've heard about Tulsa, no disrespect to fine Oklahomans, it seems to be very much like that. Trash fires on one end and bustling strips where there's, you know, just rampant drug usage and women looking for dates. You know, I think that's pretty fair.
Yeah, actually, I have not spent a lot of time in Oklahoma, so that could be pretty accurate.
We have an Oklahoma dead.
We do. We need to have some people call in with their perspective.
Born and raised.
Hot takes on is Oklahoma a place full of trash fires and people doing drugs in public? But great signs.
Yeah, and if you grew up there in high school, did you, like Rusty James, every now and again go across the bridge?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm curious, you know, are there any listeners who are from Tulsa, Oklahoma? Could someone maybe give us a tip about how Tulsa was in the 70s, 60s? When did this take place?
60s.
That's another mystery about this movie, right? Well, they shot in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
But if The Outsiders was set in the 60s, I'm assuming it's also the 60s because they were still kind of greaser types, right?
Yeah, but that one car that came up out, you know, Ghost Rider that came out of smoke, that was like a mid-70s AMC.
So you think it was contemporary to when it was shot, maybe?
Well, I think it was maybe supposed to be like 10 years before it was shot.
Okay.
But it didn't look like early 60s.
Mm-mm.
Even the motorcycle that mm-hmm. they steal at the end.
Yeah, the motorcycle did not look like a 60s motorcycle. It had kind of like funky little, like the design on the motorcycle.
And I think that the way that they were dressed, it reminded me of The Warriors, that gang film. With the sort of like vests, a lot of bare chests, despite top layers. My guess is that it was a 70s film.
Yeah.
I think that's a good guess. Yeah.
So someone needs to maybe let us know how things were in Tulsa in the 1970s.
Yeah.
Yeah. We know you're out there, listener, who went to high school in Tulsa in the 1970s. Let us know. Yeah.
Let us know. All right, what else do we need to say about this movie? It was our cinematography trilogy.
Yeah, so I have to say, having watched both Be Somebody and now Rumblefish, our cinematography has so far meant it looks beautiful and there is not very much plot or dialogue that would, you know, nothing to write home about when it comes to plot or dialogue.
Yeah. So we have to add a new segment. What was your favorite shot? Because it's hard to pick. We had trouble picking a favorite line out of Be Somebody.
This one might be a hard one to pick a favorite line. Do you have a favorite line?
I do have a favorite line.
Oh!
Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's when our protagonist, Rusty James, is hanging out with his girlfriend type, and for whatever reason, she's unpacking groceries with her mom, and her mom yells out, whatever the daughter's name was, I forget it. Patty! You know, when I was young, my boyfriend used to take me places. That is my line of the movie.
She delivered it so well, too. Yeah, that was a really solid line.
Okay, well, then I'll go deep and I'll pull one out as well.
Okay.
My favorite line of the movie is that after Smoke does the end around on him and steals his presidency of the non-existent gang, and has his girlfriend, and it delivers his charm bracelet with a picture of him on his fifth birthday. They go outside, Rusty James and Smoke, to work it out, the details. And at the end, Rusty James said, oh, yeah, and he hands him the pool cue. And then Smoke says, don't flatter yourself. And I was like, what does that even mean? I don't know what just happened. That's my favorite line. Nicolas Cage. Don't flatter yourself.
And then they just drop the cue next to the trash can fire. That's burning during the day. While everyone is so sweaty in this movie.
Do you have a favorite line?
Well, it is one that we've already talked about, too. When Steve and Rusty James go out and Steve gets super wasted, and then they're walking down the dark alley and then they get mugged by the repo man and the other dude with the tire iron. And Steve with his little Coke bottle glasses goes, oh, wow, this is a progressive country. Integrated mugging. Was honestly the only real funny line of the movie. Although the mom yelling, my boyfriend used to take me places, is a really good one too. So there were some moments of humor in the movie.
Yeah. I actually thought that line came from you guys. I didn't think it came out of the movie. I thought it was you guys behind me.
So there were a couple of lines in the movie, but kind of like Be Somebody, you had to, instead of it being like Breaking Away where we could just throw a bunch of lines out there just full of good lines.
Yeah. Or Kings of Summer.
Kings, oh man, nothing but amazing lines in there. They needed that screenwriter to come and punch up.
But my favorite shot, think
my favorite shot is at one point there's a shot where, I have a couple favorite shots. The one that I even remembered from seeing it before is when Tom Waits, who's Benny at Benny's Billiards, is at the counter, he's wiping the counter, and there's that great clock with a scrolling menu. And Tom Waits, in his Tom Waits voice, is going, dime, dime, dime. Dime, when you're young, time doesn't go by, but when you're old, it goes by fast, 35 years. And he's just going on a Tom Waits rant. And it's a great shot because you're looking down from above at him and the clock's just cranking over and cranking over. And you're looking at the top of Tom Waits wiping a counter as he's ranting about time. And so I like that shot. And then there's another shot where you're looking down the alley and you see the shadows of the fire escape. And they grow longer and longer and longer on the building until they close the whole building. So kind of cages in the building. So I like that shot too.
Those are my two favorite shots.
Yeah, there were some really good shots in the movie. And I also liked the, just in general, like the way that he used the shadows in there too. Because there was one where there was like a dog, I think, and like a man, and it was just all in shadow. It was a drunk father coming home, and you could see the shadow of the dog and the shadow of the man like coming home. It was really cool. And when they're down below to do the rumble too, like everything is shot in like such, you know, such high contrast. And then like when they have the alleyway leading down and they're like taking Rusty James away because he's been injured, and the cop who's like looks like, as you described it, one of the village people dressed as a cop is like up in the foreground, and then like you can see the shadows as they're taking him away down the alley. There's some like really cool work with the shadows and the shots as well.
Yeah, and I think that did you say what your favorite shot was?
I don't have a specific one. I think it was the shadows with the dog and the man coming home.
There
like
was
the
another
father.
One with the cat. Remember, you hit the shadow of the cat. Too.
But I think like the shadow of the drunk father coming home to the door.
Yeah, there were a lot of great shots in this film. It was visually beautiful. I can't really remember a lot of my favorite shots because again I was half asleep when I watched this, but I do remember very distinctly. One of the last shots. In fact, the final two shots. There's one as the credits roll, of our protagonist Rusty James, riding his motorcycle, or presumably his brother's motorcycle, to the water, and it's just kind of he looks like a silhouette almost, and it's a great way to end the movie. A great way to end a vague movie, because it. You know, it nothing has really been established, and there was something very I don't know how to describe it, indescribably beautiful about it. And I think that is the essence of this movie. There's another shot at the end where you know, it's when the thing happens. How big are you on spoilers?
Oh, spoil everything.
Well, you know, the motorcycle boy, who is the adored older brother who comes back to town, you know, he gets shot by the village people cop.
So embarrassing. He got murdered by a village people cop.
Yeah, he was murdered by a Freddie Mercury lookalike.
What did he do that was so bad?
He took the rumble fish to the river. He was trying to not box those fish in. But after the motorcycle boy gets shot by the Freddie Mercury cop, there's this shot that it's the camera basically kind of like leaving his dead body, his corpse, and you see all the sort of legs, all the people in the town, presumably Tulsa, are coming, you know, to see what's happened. And you just get like a lot of stray, fleeting voices, and the voices, they sound like shadows appear. And I guess shadows were a very important sort of element in this film. So I thought that was very beautiful.
Yeah, I was thinking about that one too. Yeah, and then the last one, which is, this is a whole sequence, this isn't a shot, but I think the most fun sequence of the whole movie is his near-death experience when he floats out of his body and floats along around town looking at all of the people, and floats by his girlfriend Patty crying over his bandana on the front steps with her sister. What does he say to her?
I don't know, but he smokes a cigarette.
And then he's just smoking a cigarette as he sort of floats sideways past her. And he's like, oh, it wasn't me, Patty.
Oh, no, he's like, I always loved you, Patty. You were the only one for me.
Mm-hmm. Smoking a cigarette as he floats on by. Yeah. Ugh. That was a fun one. And the smoke is like, they've got like a smoke machine, like running smoke, because it's the smokiest town in America.
It's unbelievable.
There's
the
like a
smoke
machine running
movie.
All over their porch. So that was a fun one
that
as
was
well.
A fun scene.
Yeah.
All right. So we have to dig deep in this one. So we have to go to a few segments.
We do.
Do we have a picture in a car?
We should. In the middle of the episode.
Am I doing the pitching, or
you're gonna pitch yourself a car? What should we guess? What it is?
I think we should take a couple guesses.
Okay.
I don't know any cars.
Okay. What do you think's gonna want?
I'm gonna say. You said it wasn't an orphan brand.
Not to my knowledge.
Oh, no, I actually think I know what it is. I shouldn't guess then, because I think I know what it is. You should guess first.
Okay.
Well, you know, I have my own penchant for the cars that I pitched to him, and I can only hope that he's going to go this way. And I can't remember if I pitched him the old Saab. So I'm going to go with an old Saab, the little two-cylinder Saabs made in the 60s and 70s. They had a little motorcycle engine in them. You actually put a spare engine in the back. I think I might have pitched this to him.
I don't think so.
No, you could keep in the back of the wagon. And then if your car broke down, you would just get out and put the new engine in, take the old engine out, and continue on your way. And they're just great little, and they have that two-stroke engine, so they make that sound. It would be a great sound coming out of a car. So I'm going to go with a mid-60s Saab for him. All right, Jezebel?
Well,
I think I'm right. He doesn't even have to say it. You can tell it in his eyes. They're twinkling.
Well, I think you really should go with a motorcycle, given the subject of this movie. So
at least a motorcycle engine.
Yes. Yeah. So you're on theme with this, because you can't be a motorcycle boy if you don't have a motorcycle.
Please let it be a trike.
But I think you're going to be... Like a motorized tricycle.
That's a three
wheel. Forget all those new motorized scooters they have now. Let's do a motorized. That'll be way better for people.
Way better.
Put your child on a motorized tricycle and send him to school. Yep. Uber's come out with a line of motorized tricycles for children.
Trike share. You heard it here first. We came up with that idea.
But I think instead of motorcycle boy, you're going to be a VW bus boy.
Okay, so those are two pretty good guesses. I do really like VW buses, and I do have an affinity for Saabs. And are they Danish or Swedish?
Swedish.
Yeah.
Because you are part Swede, right?
After this
last meal.
Yes, after eating Swedish food, I have become 2% Swedish. I think that's how it works.
It is. It's Lutefisk that gets in your DNA.
Well, let me tell you about the car that I would like to pitch to myself or to any generous people listening, so that they can buy that vehicle for me. You know, losing out just narrowly are monster trucks. Any of them, I love monster trucks, and motorized skateboards with the fat wheels. Is the car perhaps of my dreams, in that I've had a dream that I was driving one once after watching the episode of Comedians and Cars Getting Coffee, in which this car appears, the Alfa Romeo Giulia Super from 1966.
And who's in that car?
John Mulaney, who, you know, he's not the funniest character, but a great episode nonetheless, because they drive in my neighborhood, which for anonymity reasons shall not be named.
It's east of Tulsa?
It is east of Tulsa. Yes, okay. That is appropriate. It's northeast of Tulsa.
Okay.
It's just a great little vehicle. I don't know.
I'm going to have to watch it. I have not watched it.
What
that
do
one.
You know about the
Alfa
1966
Romeo?
Alfa
I
Romeo.
I do not know anything about it. I'm super intrigued now.
Are you going on style? What is it about this car specifically?
It's purely aesthetic. It is just a beautiful little car.
That's what you choose a car for.
It's beautiful, and it's aerodynamic, more so than many other cars that were around at that time. Mm. Less boxy and sort of, you know, great rounded edges.
Hmm. Okay, so now we know he likes aerodynamic.
All right, now you know.
Oh,
and that he's all about the aesthetics when it comes to a car.
Yeah,
no,
I've got some cars for him now.
Yeah.
Now that I know. Some orphan brands. Mm.
And I think small is important. Small cars are great. You know, small four-door cars. Not, you know, not the jokey sort of like, you know, midlife crisis, you know, 911 Porsche.
Yeah, no. That's not where we were going.
No.
Okay. So, I'm going to look up.
You got some research to do now, Gracie Rapidian.
I do have some.
You got an episode
out there that owns one.
Our pop culture shout out of the day today.
Yes.
Comedians and Cars Getting Coffee. Apparently we need to watch the, well, now people, if they watch it, they're gonna know your neighborhood.
well, they drive through a few different neighborhoods.
Okay, so it could be one of multiple neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Mm.
But there is a shot that was taken approximately one block right across the street from my house.
Mm. Wow.
Mm. An Easter egg for listeners.
Yeah. Was there a man in a Confederate hat?
No, there wasn't, but there was this little girl who was just dying to get in the shot.
She just kept wandering into the shot, looking straight at the camera. Oh,
I think I know that neighborhood.
All right, yeah, maybe there's a listener that has one of these cars.
And they could tell us about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've got a new path to go down now that I know. Some parameters. I had no parameters really before, just Orphan Brand. And now I know. All right, should we wrap up this movie segment?
I know, we have not talked about the movie at all.
There's just not.
Why is he colorblind? Why is he deaf but can also hear people all the time? It just is like
what
different
does any of the
sound.
Dialogue mean?
Why do they keep Steve around?
Do you have is there a segment in this podcast where you point out a line that basically is the movie?
Mm. We have done that because we've talked about like the thesis of the movies. Yeah, yeah. Do you have a line that you think illustrates the thesis of the movie?
Can we wrap it into who is this movie made for?
Yeah,
and does this line then illustrate who this movie was made for?
Yes, let's wrap those two things together.
I have there are a couple of lines. I think that you know, one of the issues with this movie is that there's a degree of like faux subtlety and faux sort of like I don't know, sophistication in the dialogue. So, you know, that there were clearly two lines that were very, you know, two or three lines that were very similar, that were, you know, that the gist of them was they were all just about going places. So, you know, when the mom yells out to her daughter, "My boyfriend used to take me places," I think that that's somewhat what the movie is about. But there's another scene in the pool hall where there's just a random black gentleman who is talking to Rusty James, not Rusty John, and Rusty James is basically fawning over his brother, his adored brother, who's back in town and who's beating some guy at pool or something like that. And the black guy is just saying, "Oh, you know, that man is a prince. That boy is a prince." And Rusty James says, "Yeah, I'm going to be like him. I'm going to look like him in a couple years." And the black guy says, "You'll never be that man." And I think that was really what the movie was about.
In terms of... You got all deep on us, huh? In terms of... people, because it's great that you brought this in. It's a liminal space, and so people are going places, and so they're not going to go any places. That the message that everybody talks about going someplace, but nobody's going any place.
Well, so the movie, it's about two different things, and it's hard to really sort of reconcile how those things relate to each other, because I think, you know, again, this was a vague movie, but it's on the one hand about becoming the motorcycle boy, and then on the other hand, it's about going places. The motorcycle boy, he leaves, he goes to California, and then he comes back, but he still seems caged or boxed in. I think that the movie ends with that song, "Don't Box Me In." Very very subtle. I think that this was more a movie about not becoming the motorcycle boy or about becoming the motorcycle boy than it is a movie about going places or about growing up. I think that like Rusty James has a few different models for how to become an adult, and his brother is clearly the one that wins out. But his brother, you know, gets shot by the Freddie Mercury cop at the end, so you know there's no way for him to become that. So, you know, he'll have to seek some other model or just like grow up by himself. And we know how much he hates being alone, because there's this whole like dialogue with I think his brother, maybe, about how, you know, how he hates being alone, how it makes him feel like he's suffocating or drowning. So I think it's just gonna be hard for him, because he'll never be that man. He'll never be his brother. He'll never be able to be his brother because his brother's, you know, unfortunately dead.
Yeah, and I feel like, I don't know, does he want to be his brother, though? Or does he just, like, because he's always kind of mad that he feels like his dad and his brother are so different from him, that they're, like, intellectual in a way that he's not. Because he keeps saying, like, why do you have to use all these big words? Like, I'm smart, but I just don't use big words, right? And his brother is this kind of, like, zen guy who never raises his voice, and like, so it's hard to, again, like, why, how did his brother become the leader of a gang that then he becomes so famous for that, but like the character that we see is this like zen guy who like never, I guess he runs over Biff. I don't know, does he want to be his brother? What is he, like, he, I think, like, one of the only actual notes I took down was that, like, Rusty James seems to exist, like, in the moment as, like, he's never really, like, thinking ahead to, like, what's going to come in the future, you know? Like, he quits school and he never thinks, like, should I do this or should I not do this, right? He just gets really mad and, like, throws the principal's stuff around and leaves. And, like, he goes to the party and he cheats on his girlfriend. And then he's, like, shocked that she would be upset about that because he's just, like, living, like, moment to moment, right? And it seems like his brother is not, right? His brother is, like, always thinking about, like, the bigger picture. The dad does say, like, just because your brother's different doesn't make him crazy, and that he's drawing this kind of like distinction between Rusty James and the motorcycle boy, and saying like the dad and the motorcycle boy are these kind of crazy characters and that Rusty James isn't. And so I don't know, like, I think that is a really interesting question, though, like, what are his models of adulthood? Because it doesn't seem like any adults in the movie are doing very well, aside from the mom, I guess. The girlfriend's mom seems to be doing fine, but like, we don't really have any models of adulthood of like, well, yeah, what does happen to them? I guess Benny's the only other one.
And the pet shop owner.
And the pet shop owner, yeah. But like, there aren't really like models of like what happens after you transition in that liminal space from like being a teenager, dropping out of high school, trying to be in a gang that gives you an organizing principle in your life. But when those don't exist, then what do you do?
I know. And so I'm so, now we're going to shine the turd, right?
Yeah, we really are.
Because if I put together what both of you are saying, so Steve at one point has this great line in it. So who is this movie for? And Steve says, I can never tell what the motorcycle boy is thinking. I can always tell what you're thinking, right? And so Rusty James, you know, he's living in this vision of the past and he's trying to bring that into the future, right? And so then there's this scene where his near-death experience, they get mugged in the and so he's laying there and he's out of his body, and the motorcycle boy comes, beats up the muggers, and then he comes back into his body and he wakes up and he's like, oh, what happened? And then Steve tells him, you know, motorcycle boy beat him up, right? So the motorcycle boy comes to beat the guys that are going to kill him so that he comes back into his body, so that he gets back in there. And then the motorcycle boy gets killed at the end, and he says, you know, you got to promise me, you got to promise me that after this, you're going to take the motorcycle and you're going to go to California. So he makes him promise, because the motorcycle boy knows he's going to die. And so he knows he's going to die, but his death is going to free Rusty James. And even in the movie, he says, you went to California. How was the ocean? And he said, I never made it to the ocean. And he's like, well, what do you mean? He said, why didn't you make it to the ocean? And he says, because California got in the way. And he's just like, what does that mean, right? California got in the way. And they never explain it, right?
Yeah.
But then after he dies, you know, he gets on the bike and you see his shadow again, the shadow of the motorcycle riding past the motorcycle boy Reigns. And so you see the shadow go past it. And then there's that great scene at the end when he's on the beach and you just see him. He makes it to the water. So California doesn't get in the way. He makes it to the water and then all the birds rise up, you know. And so if he was a rumblefish, now he's a bird. And so I'm going to say that the movie, in its deep philosophical zenness, that Motorcycle Boy has given his life to free Rusty James. And so Rusty James could not move from the past through the liminal space into who he was going to be without Motorcycle Boy making a sacrifice. And so Motorcycle Boy makes the sacrifice. The Rumblefish get together in the river and they're okay. So the past isn't what it's going to be. It's going to be something new. Rusty James dumps him in the river and then he goes out. And so he's somebody different now. He's not the gang guy anymore. He's the one that has carried him to the river. And so he didn't become who he thought his brother was. He became who his brother wanted to be. And his brother couldn't make it. His brother couldn't make it to the ocean. His brother couldn't put the fish in the river. But Rusty James could. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I think that I buy that. I think that as much as Rusty James wanted to be his brother, his brother wanted to be him a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I buy that too. Yeah. And that Rusty James had to be the one to get out. Because his brother, it seems like his brother tried, and he couldn't.
His brother tried and couldn't, but he saw that Rusty James could. And maybe it's because what you're saying, because Rusty James lived in the moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that he knew that he could get him out if he made the moment correct.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas he lived in the big picture, and if you see the big picture, there's no hope.
Yeah.
There was a sense of hopelessness. Like watching that movie, I was like, yeah, there's a tremendous amount of hopelessness in this movie. You know, there was no hope for anybody. When you say, who was the adult?
Yeah.
You know, all of them, you're just like, there's no hope for any of them. It was a dismal existence for everyone, even Benny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I don't think he was having a great time. Yeah.
So who was this movie for?
Do you guys have an idea?
Well, aside from Nicolas Cage,
it was made to
give Nicolas Cage a role.
Well, it was made for Nicolas Cage's dad. Yep, Francis Ford Coppola made it for his older brother idolized, August Coppola, a.k.a. Nicolas Cage Sr. He would have been the Motorcycle Boy.
And Francis Ford is Rusty James.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, although this, you know, I think it was, this was an S.E. Hinton novel. This was not a Coppola novel, but maybe it was just one that like resonated with them so much that they had to make it into a film.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah. Yeah. And he was like, who better to play Smoke than my nephew, Nicolas Cage? Yeah. This boy's going to be a star.
Mm-hmm. But I think it was that. You know, he recognized in the movie, because, you know, I mean, he's famous for making movies of other people's novels, so he recognizes things in other people's work that he can resonate with and bring to the screen, sometimes in a profitable way and sometimes like this, one from the heart, otherwise in a not profitable way. But he will just make them, even if it bankrupts his studio, because he's so invested in the story. And I think it was... like, he made this for brothers, right? And for older brothers who paved the way for younger brothers.
Hmm.
And that you have to look to see it, because there's not a lot there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to go with that. But it was made for adult younger brothers of older brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah, I think this was very much a movie for kid brothers. Adults or adolescent, you know? I am not a kid brother. I mean, I guess I am, but I have sisters. But if I were watching that as like a freshman in high school, for example, and my brother was a cool senior, who was an intellectual type, I think I would have taken that to heart. You know, just that line of that's repeated over again. You'll never be that man. I think that might have. Been somewhat like formative in my like life and experience.
Yeah. And I think even for older brothers, for the older brother in the movie to see, you know, what the burden that's been placed on the younger brother from what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And then how does he free the younger brother from that burden? And I think that's in that movie too.
Mm-hmm. You know, Sophia, if I'm not I'm a middle brother, so I have both angles of it. But I was not a legendary older brother, nor was I an adoring younger brother. You know, so it's not really my movie either way. But I can see clearly how you would say, oh, wow, I did all that, and now the brother that comes behind me has to live into all that stuff I did, whatever it is. And you can, I can also see the other part. There's my older brother, and here's all the stuff he did, and I'm going to either live into that or not be that, which is kind of what we do. We either are that or not that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this movie is about the being that, and the older brother wants him to not be that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, yeah, who it's for. It could be younger brothers, you know, younger, you know, teenage boys that see it and go, yeah, I recognize that. Or it could be adult males that say, oh, I remember that from my youth.
Yeah, I agree. I do think, because that is the central relationship of the movie, you know, like the romance is very much like a secondary little part of it, which is, you know, of course they advertise it with the two romantic leads when it really should have been Mickey Rourke and Matt Dillon face to face on the cover of it. Because that is, yeah, that is the central relationship of the movie. Yeah. And having not been either an older brother or a younger brother or a brother at all. But I can see I can see like how that, you know, I think that is a theme that could resonate beyond that as well. Mm. You know, two people who have that kind of relationship. So.
Yeah. So we always write down our ratings beforehand, because the movie's going up in my ratings.
I know, yeah. It always it goes up or down depending on our conversation. Sometimes you're like, wow, this is a lot worse than I thought. Or
my conversation,
this is a lot better.
Like, wow, yeah, there's a lot to be had there,
some,
I guess,
yeah,
if you dig deep.
Yeah, that's true. But we do need to talk about, before we rate the movie, we need to talk about what we watched before. We're bringing back another segment.
Oh, okay.
Because it might have affected our watching of this movie.
Yeah.
What did you watch before you watched this?
The last movie that I watched before this was Laurie Anderson's Heart of a Dog.
How do you think that affected your watching?
Well, I would have to say that I identified the dog, Lola, with Rusty James.
He was kind of a dog.
He absolutely was. If Rusty James had painted, I can imagine he would go with red expressionism.
Abstract expressionism.
Yep. If Rusty James
would Rusty James have made a Christmas album?
Rusty James' Christmas album would have been the same. If Rusty James had done sculpture, I'm sure it would have just been his handprints. And the older brother, Motorcycle Boy, was legendary like Laurie Anderson. So I think the relationship was very similar.
You think Lola Bell was really concerned about living in the shadow of Laurie Anderson?
I really do.
Because Laurie Anderson went out to the, and somewhere in California, probably Lodi, with Rusty James, because the sheep, and not Rusty James, but Lola Bell. And the next dog I get, well, we're naming Rusty James.
Oh, yeah.
Because she heard that that dogs know 500 words, and so she wanted to figure out what 500 words Lola Bell knew. And so she figured if she spent a couple months with Lola Bell alone, then she would know. And I'm thinking Rusty James knew 500 words. So
I think so.
It's a direct correlation, the two movies.
Yeah.
So
that really did affect your watching of the...
I would say probably no. Absolutely none.
Yeah, and so we watched, before we watched this, the last movie we watched was The Florida Project.
And that
made anything that was to come next very yeah, it was very likely to be a failure.
It's a tough act to follow after you see The Florida Project. Yes, it's a really good movie. Yeah, and it's kind of a little bit the opposite, because like the colors in The Florida Project, like the use of color, it's shot so vibrantly, and like everything there is kind of this super saturated, because it takes place outside of Disney, like in these hotels or motels outside of Disney World, and so everything is this hyper saturated colors.
And Rumblefish is shot in black and white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and it's a really, really good movie. So, yep. Although, you know, Rusty James might be a Mooney. Mooney is a Rusty James living in the moment.
maybe. I think that if Rusty James were to grow up, he'd be the Bobby character, you know. He'd just be like a really sort of kind guy, you know, really sort of soft-hearted. But then, you know, but we won't get into what the Florida Project is about. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say it's a coming of age film, right?
Kind of, yeah. And it's kind of it is a liminal space.
And it is a liminal space. It is I think similar to Rumblefish. It's about a place that might otherwise be ignored or sort of like neglected, unseen. So I think there are a lot of similarities.
Mm-hmm.
Visually, it's very stunning as well.
Mm-hmm. And kind of like, what is it? Yeah, what does adulthood look like?
Right. Yes.
From a child's perspective, but a much younger child too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. It's a really good movie.
All right, and so that influenced Rumble.
It definitely did. Yes. Yeah.
Are we ready to rate the movie?
I think we are ready to rate the movie.
And so this is 11, and so I believe Jennifer, you're the odd one.
I think I'm going first. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think one of the things about this movie too, and I do agree, talking about it more made me like it more. But it's like I'm almost forgetting it, you know. And we watched it like 12 hours ago, and I'm already forgetting bits of it. It was not a movie that I think is going to stick around in my brain for that long. So I rated it 176 kissing booths.
176. Okay. Anarcho-syndicalist?
I think that I'm going to give it 222.222.
Wow.
So 222.222. Wow.
The anarcho-syndicalist is introducing decimal points into our ratings.
It wasn't that we didn't have enough. You could go up to 100,000.
No, absolutely not. That 222. Second, a thousandth. I don't remember how to talk about decimals anymore. I'm an adult.
222 thousandths.
Yes, that was very vital.
Okay, to separate it from the 222 movies.
Right. Yeah, I think this is a solidly a 222.222 movie.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, and we'll convert that later into stars.
Yes, we will.
All right. Now, for me, it was. I have to check again because. Now I'm just enamored with the 222.222.
For me, it was 128 KBs for me.
We didn't have a big spread amongst us in terms of our ratings. Introducing a third person did not really shift the ratings astronomically. No, we all had pretty much the same.
We're still looking for the movie where we greatly disagree on it. So.
I think I have one for you.
Really?
Really?
Yes, I do. I think the movie Troll 2 might elicit some very disparate responses.
I can imagine anybody
really?
Liking it.
You think somebody's going to come in here and be like, Troll 2 is the greatest movie ever made.
I could take it on the island with me.
Yeah. I'd watch it every day for the rest of my life.
How about the Titanic, the animated American Titanic? Film with the rapping dog.
Give us a little. Give us a little. Give us a little bit of the dog rap.
Can you give us a little bit more?
No, I don't. I think it was just thoroughly unmemorable. The rap. It was horrible though. It was so bad.
People forget that there was a rapping dog on the Titanic.
People forget.
Yeah,
that part
people
of it.
Really forget.
Yep. And we have the Titanic game, and people forget that there was a problem with desert islands.
Yeah. Afterwards, everybody had to land on desert islands.
Yeah, the lifeboats that landed on desert islands faced severe trials on those desert islands. And people forget that part of the Titanic story as well. I'm sure that was in the animated classic, though.
I'm sure it was.
The dog was on the island.
That dog was rapping on a tropical island immediately after that boat sank.
I would watch that dog rap on an island.
I hope that dog has a whole album. Forget Lullabelle. I want that. Yeah. Why wasn't Lullabelle rapping her Christmas album?
Yeah, Lullabelle might
500 words, that's plenty.
Maybe Lola Bella's
descendant. You
can
do a whole song with just one word.
Lola Bella's descendant from the rapping Titanic. It's clear.
I think so. All right, so before we wrap things up, we did not do a Star by Far for this movie.
Oh, okay.
So let's wrap up a quick lightning round of Star by Far.
And we're going to do a favorite outfit as well?
Oh, there were so many good outfits, actually, in this movie.
Yeah.
Well, lots of vests and no shirts.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite outfit?
Me?
Yes.
Or Deonarcus and Nicholas?
Either of you.
Go ahead.
I think there are a few favorite outfits. I did really enjoy Nicolas Cage's Wild Deuces like
satin jacket.
Yeah. It's kind of like a bomber jacket. And then underneath he was wearing like a tank top and a and then some creased pants. And I thought that was a great look. Also, Larry Fishburne at that time, he was known as Larry and not Lawrence Fishburne. He was wearing a white suit the entire time with like a fedora, a feathered fedora. It was a really interesting look.
Very thin tie. It was a good look.
You couldn't tell how old he was supposed to be in the movie, so I think
or
for that
who he was,
yeah.
And I think for that reason, maybe he's not the star by far, but the best outfit for sure.
Best outfit.
Yeah, I do think he was one of the best dressed people in the movie for sure. Yeah, the ladies were not really bringing it. It was a man's fashion world in this.
Although the woman dancing next to the heroin dancer had those shorts that were just killer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she brought some shorts.
I also enjoyed Rusty James. Well, I did really like the striped cardigan with no sleeves that the trumpet player was playing in the billiard hall when they were all just like, you know, just having a party. I really liked that. And I did laugh really hard at the motorcycle boy's short sleeve. Like it was like a cutoff sweater, V-neck sweater with no sleeves that he was wearing in what was clearly like 150 degree weather. And he was like, oh, I'll just cut off the sleeves and then I'll be cool. Yeah. And he just wore that all the time. Oh, yeah. That was a bad one. The dad was really well dressed too. He was wearing like a three-piece suit to the dive bar.
And a hat.
Yeah.
Sweating unbelievably.
Unbelievably sweaty. His hair just in like greasy tendrils
Dennis
down
Hopper.
His face.
We didn't shout him out yet. Dennis Hopper. Man.
Yeah, we did not shout out baby Diane Lane either.
No.
She was
or
good.
Or Domino.
So are we ready for Star by Far?
Did you have a favorite outfit?
Well, my favorite outfit was the random black dude in the pool hall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There were a lot of random black dudes in good outfits in the background of the movie, too.
Because I think he was like shirtless, sleeveless vest in sweltering weather.
Mm-hmm. He had a hat, too, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. No sleeves, but a hat.
But a hat, just hanging out by the payphone, you know, commentating on everything that was happening. Mm-hmm. No, he looked great. So
who was your star by far?
Just edging out random black dude, who I believe that was what he was cast as, was Domino.
Domino!
Young Sofia Coppola. I think she was, like I was saying last night when we watched this movie, she was way better in this than she was in The Godfather Part 3. She was just, you know, she just had this effortless charm to her. She was a great character who I didn't really understand what her purpose was, but I think that, you know, it's just like, hey, we can get you a quick acting credit because I'm your dad and I made this movie.
Yeah, like Nicolas Cage, she had some good years in the early 80s and then really took a dive after that. Yeah.
Well, she was great in Godfather 1, wasn't she in Godfather 1?
She was in Godfather 1 and Godfather 2. In Godfather 1, she was Michael Ritzy as an infant, and in Godfather 2 she was Child on Ship.
That was a great performance.
So she killed it in the first couple of Godfathers.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. Do you have a star by far?
I do have a star by far.
Who's
and that
yours?
Is Benny.
Benny.
He just was Tom Waits. I mean, how can you go against Tom Waits?
He was good.
He's
yeah.
always, you know, that character in every movie he's in, all the Jim Jarmusch movies, he's that guy. And he's that guy in this movie. His gum chewing, awesome.
The mouth sounds on that gum
ASMR,
chewing.
ASMR, right? Oh. Killing it. He was early adapter of ASMR in that movie.
Some rough mouth sounds.
And also his outfits, he had his glasses, and you know, and he just never got mad. Get down from there, Rusty James. Get down. get off of the arrest, James. Like, I should do my Tom Waits voice, I guess. Ah, get that off of the arrest, James. Rusty James. Ah, get off of there. he was awesome. And then he was
this
just spew out like 2 words
time.
Of wisdom.
Yep.
Everybody wants a drink. It's the same random things. And I'm sure he had no dialogue. I'm sure he is somehow related to Francis Ford. He's like, yeah, I'll just put you in there and every now and again just say something. Yeah, I got that. All right, Jezebel.
I think that I have to give a special shout out in my star by far to Essie Hinton herself, who appeared in the movie. She helped to write the script for this one, and then she appeared in the movie as the sex worker who tries to solicit Rusty James and then almost successfully solicits Steve because he does not know what's happening. So, yeah, I love that she came in and she was like, yeah, I'll do a cameo. Forget being a teacher at a school dance. Like, we've had a couple now because I was into All the Boys I Loved Before. Forget that. No, I'll be the sex worker who wanders into this Vegas strip party. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, well, game. The plum role would have been high school office administrator.
Yes.
If you were a female in this movie, mm-hmm. that was like the plum role. I mean, what else did you have?
This heroin addicted substitute teacher?
No, not a good role.
Yeah.
The mom, maybe.
Yeah. She Patty's had like mom. The two lines. Yeah. She didn't get to do any good armpit dancing. like the substitute teacher. Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, so Essie Hinton. Yeah.
Okay, what's coming up next?
So we're going to round out the trilogy in 2 weeks.
And I guess I always count on you to do this, and we didn't. The people from Tulsa are going to contact us?
Oh, yes.
How are they going to do that?
Yeah, so if you either have perspectives on going to high school in Tulsa in the 1970s, what else were we...
Or you drive a 1966 Alfa Romeo Juliet?
Yes.
What else am I missing about it?
Julia Super.
Super. Okay.
Super, excuse me. Then you can reach out to us at our email, which is AmericanJezebel.GreaseyRapidian@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at AmericanJezebel, or you can check out our Instagram. We're going to Instagram some key moments from this episode.
Yeah.
At American_Jezebel.
Yeah, so check out Instagram because there's going to be two new photos.
There's going to be some photos up on the Instagram.
Of the studio.
Yeah.
And us. I don't think there's a photo of us going full Joe Rogan again. Cause we have to say that.
We are Joe Roganing.
Yeah, we're orthogonal again.
Yes.
So.
And we're going to...
We're going to be sponsored by the word orthogonal as well.
We're really not selling out. We're being sponsored by words now.
We're so desperate. Sponsors, call us Joe or Courtney.
We'll protect the anonymity of the anarcho-syndicalist.
Please do. I do not want to be associated with a podcast that is sponsored by big words.
Rusty James, he knows it. Even Rusty James knows it.
So, if you have perspectives on those specific things... Or just you want to come at us for our takes on Rumblefish or Be Somebody. If you're a real big Be Somebody supporter, I want to hear from you.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, I want to hear somebody who either really hates or really loves that movie. Because I felt very neutral about it.
Yeah, that was beige.
It was beige. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was not the black and white or hypersaturated. No. So we're going to come back. We're going to have, I think... No spoilers, but more plot than we've had in our previous cinematography movies. And we're going to be watching Call Me By Your Name.
Which I know almost nothing about.
Yeah. We did not do a what is this movie about for this episode.
Sorry,
but
Amber.
In 2 weeks, we're going to come back and have the first round of The Greasy Rapidian Says.
What
is this movie about?
Qua?
It should be. No, what is it in Italian?
Geek?
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. So join us then to talk some nonsense.
Thanks for talking nonsense.
And thanks to the anarcho-syndicalists
for
coming and humoring us.
Absolutely. First time, long time.